Working in the modern data ecosystem right now, it feels a bit like trying to build a house. But every single night while you sleep, the architect just sneaks in and secretly changes the
Oh,
blueprints.
yeah, that is exactly what it feels like.
Right, like you wake up and your hammer is suddenly in a totally different toolbox. The walls have moved like 3 feet to the left, and somehow your boss still expects you to have the roof finished by noon.
And under budget, of course.
Obviously. But I mean, that really is the state of the data ecosystem today. So, welcome to the Deep Dive, everyone. Today, we are looking at the AI Data Daily Weekly Review from March 15th, 2026.
Just packed this week. Just a lot to get through.
It really is. And our mission today for you listening is to cut through the endless deafening noise of all these PR announcements and Reddit threads. We want to uncover how the actual day-to-day expectations for data professionals are fundamentally shifting beneath our feet.
Yeah, because it is a profound state of disorientation for anyone in the field right now. If you just look at the surface level of the source material today, you basically see a scattered list of platform updates, some new certifications, a lot of Reddit complaints.
So many Reddit complaints.
Always. But looking closely at the mechanisms behind these updates, it reveals a much broader theme. It's not just about, what buttons have moved in the UI.
Right.
It's about how these hidden technical tweaks by the major cloud providers are sort of colliding with massive, unyielding AI advancements, and it's creating a totally new reality for data teams.
A reality that's incredibly demanding.
Exactly. But it also offers unprecedented leverage if you actually know where to look.
So to understand these changing expectations, I think we have to start with the foundational tools themselves, because the platforms we rely on to do our jobs, they're silently shifting their default settings,
They really are.
which means the old habit of just like trusting the platform to optimize for you is completely dead.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
You just can't. Like, for example, let's look at Microsoft Fabric. On March 1st, Microsoft rolled out an update where they quietly disabled VOrder by default for all new lakehouses.
Just turns it off.
Just turned it off. Existing lakehouses keep it. But if you spin up a new one today, that optimization is completely disabled.
So, just for some context on why that actually matters for you guys, VOrder is Microsoft's proprietary columnar storage optimization for Parquet files.
Right.
When you write data, VOrder applies specialized sorting, dictionary encoding, and compression techniques. So physically, it organizes the data on disk in a way that aligns perfectly with how the compute engines in Fabric, like the SQL endpoints or Spark, read that data into memory.
Okay.
The result is that your read-heavy analytical queries, the ones powering your dashboards, they run significantly faster. It is a massive performance booster that used to just be there for you automatically.
Okay, so let's unpack this for a second. If VOrder makes query performance demonstrably better, isn't turning it off by default incredibly
It
counterintuitive?
seems like it, yep.
I mean, that's like buying a high-end sports car, but the dealership disables the turbo by default just to save you gas money. Like, why make users hunt for the go fast button?
Well, what's fascinating here is that this is the exact tension of the modern cloud era. Microsoft hasn't officially published a technical manifesto on why they made this change, but looking at the underlying economics of distributed systems, it almost certainly comes down to the penalty of write performance.
Ah, okay. The right penalty.
Yeah. Formatting data into that highly optimized dictionary-encoded VOrder structure requires significant compute power and time up front, right when you are writing the data.
Right.
So if you're a company that's just dumping petabytes of raw, unstructured telemetry data into a bronze layer of a lakehouse,
Stuff you might never even query.
exactly, you might never touch it. But you are paying a massive compute tax for an optimization you don't need. So by turning it off by default, Microsoft reduces the immediate compute penalty and the storage overhead globally.
Which forces the data engineer to actually think about the life cycle of their data.
Precisely.
You can't just treat the lakehouse as this magic box anymore. You have to actively decide, like, is this table going to be heavily queried by the BI tool? Yes. Okay, I need to manually enable VOrder here.
You have to know your workloads. Platform providers are pushing the burden of architectural optimization back onto you, the user. They give you the raw, unopinionated infrastructure, but you have to orchestrate the efficiencies.
And it's not just Microsoft where users are having to hunt for these workflow efficiencies. Over in Google's ecosystem, there was this viral post this week on the Xerti Engineering subreddit.
Oh, I saw this one.
Yeah, over 150 upvotes, which, for that community, means it struck a serious chord. The entire thread was dedicated to hidden BigQuery features that save engineers from absolute misery.
It's the tribal knowledge of the discipline. I mean, when the official documentation is thousands of pages long, the community basically becomes the actual manual.
Absolutely. So the standout feature they were raving about is chained function calls.
Such a lifesaver.
Because traditionally in SQL, standard functions execute from the inside out. So if you want to clean up a string, you have a replace function, and that's wrapped inside a trim function, which is wrapped inside an UPER function.
Right.
And you end up with what the community literally calls nested function hell. You're drowning in parentheses and having to reverse engineer your own logic just to read it.
Reading from right to left, basically.
Exactly. But with chain functions in BigQuery, you can just string them together sequentially. You literally just write selectName.trim.replaced.upper.
It fundamentally changes the mental model of writing SQL.
It really does.
It allows you to process the transformation left to right, which is exactly how your brain logically visualizes a data pipeline.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like mere syntax sugar to some people. But when you consider the cognitive load of parsing abstract syntax trees in your head while you're writing thousands of lines of SQL a week.
Oh, it's brutal.
That readability is an absolute lifeline.
And they also highlighted union all by name in that same thread. So instead of the traditional union where you have to like meticulously ensure that column one in table A is the exact same data type and position as column one in table B.
Which never happens in the real world.
Never. This feature just matches the columns by their actual names, totally regardless of their order in the schema.
Which is technically brilliant because it directly addresses the reality of schema drift.
Right.
Upstream databases change constantly. A software developer adds a column to the Postgres database, and suddenly the ordinal positions of your columns in the data warehouse are totally misaligned.
And everything breaks.
Everything breaks. So union all by name acts as a sort of structural shock absorber.
Yeah.
It allows the downstream warehouse to dynamically align the data without the engineer having to write brittle, position-dependent SQL.
It's just wild to me that these massive quality of life improvements, these shock absorbers, they feel like secret menu items at a fast food place.
Yeah, you really have to be proactive to find them.
You do. And while you are proactively exploring your tools to optimize queries and save your sanity, you also have to constantly play defense. Because to top off all this platform chaos, Microsoft's March 2026 Patch Tuesday just dropped.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fixing 83 vulnerabilities across their stack, including one actively exploited zero-day.
It just illustrates the immense pressure on the modern data professional. While you're trying to, you know, balance the compute costs of vOrder and refactoring your BigQuery syntax to reduce your cognitive load,
the actual foundation is crumbling.
Exactly. The actual security foundation of your infrastructure is actively under siege and being patched in real time. The ground is just never fully solid.
Which leads to a really crucial question. If the platform defaults are shifting, the syntax is evolving, the security patches are constant, how do we actually know our pipelines aren't silently failing?
We often don't.
Right. And this brings us to the industry's desperate attempt to establish some new baselines of competence. We're moving from the chaos of the tools themselves to how we actually prove we can build anything reliable with them.
The standardization of data testing. Or, more accurately, the really painful realization that our testing standards are severely lacking.
It's the dark secret of the industry. We all know it exists, but seeing it laid bare in a massive Reddit thread, a community with almost 440,000 members, is still jarring.
What did the thread say?
So it revealed this stark split in data testing culture. You have some teams operating like NASA. They use full DBT test suites, great expectations pipelines, strict data contracts, the works.
Okay, good.
But then on the exact same cloud platforms, you have teams who freely admit their testing strategy is to literally, and I quote, eyeball row counts and pray.
Wow. Yeah, that phrase just highlights a fundamental misunderstanding of what data engineering actually is.
I mean, wait, so managing enterprise data right now is split between high-tech security grids and just hoping for the best.
Pretty much.
Eyeballing row counts and pray is like a restaurant health inspector just sniffing the outside of the building and saying, yeah, smells fine. Why is data engineering so far behind software dev when it comes to testing?
To understand that, we have to look at the mechanisms of what is actually being tested. In traditional software development, you are primarily testing logic. Does clicking button A trigger function B?
Right.
You write a unit test for that, and it is deterministic. The code either works or it doesn't.
But in data engineering, the code usually works fine. It's the data that breaks.
Exactly. In data engineering, you are testing state and entropy. You're dealing with highly non-deterministic systems because you do not control the source.
Right, the source is always changing.
An upstream software developer decides to split a full name column into first name and last name. Or some third-party API suddenly starts formatting timestamps in UTC instead of EST.
And boom.
Boom. Your SQL logic is perfectly fine, but the pipeline breaks because the entropy of the real world infiltrated the system. The rapid evolution of cloud tools has vastly outpaced the development of reliable testing frameworks that can handle that level of chaos without requiring, like, an army of engineers to maintain.
Which is why those NASA-like teams are relying on data contracts. Because a data contract acts like an API schema definition, it creates a literal barrier in the CI/CD pipeline of the upstream application.
Yes, exactly.
So if that software developer tries to push a code change that drops a column your downstream pipeline relies on, the data contract physically breaks their build. It forces the software engineer to talk to the data engineer before deploying.
It pushes the governance as far left as possible.
Right.
But implementing that requires a level of organizational maturity that most companies simply do not have yet. Hence, the reliance on eyeballing Roe counts.
Well, the industry is clearly realizing this gap is a massive liability, which explains the news from March 13th. Microsoft just launched the new Azure Databricks Data Engineer Associate Certification.
Yeah, I saw the syllabus for that.
Yeah, and looking at it, it isn't just about writing Spark code anymore. It heavily emphasizes Unity Catalog, Delta Lake design patterns, Azure integration, security.
It is an attempt by the industry to formalize the discipline. Unity Catalog, for instance, is a really critical piece of this puzzle. Mechanically, it abstracts the governance and permissions away from the physical storage layer.
Okay.
So it allows an organization to define access controls, data lineage, and auditing in one centralized place across multiple workspaces and even across different cloud providers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hmm. So the certification proves you understand this architecture. It signals to employers that you know how to build secure, governed pipelines, not just brittle SQL scripts that break when the wind blows.
And the documentation across the ecosystem is frantically trying to reflect this shift toward governance, too. Like, the DBT docs just dropped fresh guidance specifically on Unity Catalog integration.
Right.
They're heavily emphasizing how to handle cross-catalog data references and manage Delta Live Tables materialized views.
Because when you combine tools like DBT, Unity Catalog, and Delta Live Tables, you start to see the immense leverage available today. Yes, the landscape is chaotic, and yes, testing is really hard. But a single data engineer today, armed with these standardized frameworks, can orchestrate, test, and govern a data platform that would have required a specialized team of 10 engineers just a decade ago.
It's incredible leverage.
It really is. The new certification and the updated documentation are just the industry's way of setting a new baseline to harness that leverage safely.
Okay, so if testing frameworks like DBT and governance layers like Unity Catalog are currently struggling to keep up with human developers changing code, what happens to our pipelines when those upstream developers are suddenly supercharged by AI coding assistants?
Yeah, the entropy doesn't just double, it goes exponential.
This is the third part of our deep dive today, and it's where things get really intense, the human impact. Because we are constantly sold this mainstream narrative that AI is going to do our jobs for us, right?
We can all just relax on a beach while the algorithms crunch the numbers.
Exactly. But the reality on the ground is the exact opposite. A really sobering discussion on that same subreddit made it painfully clear. AI tools are actually increasing workloads for data engineers.
Which raises an important question. Why is that happening? To understand it, we have to look at the concept of data exhaust.
Data exhaust?
Yeah. Every time a software developer builds a new microservice, adds a new feature, or tracks a new user event, they generate telemetry. They generate data exhaust. Oh.
And AI copilots for upstream developers, they're like putting a brick on the gas pedal of a car.
Precisely.
Software engineers are shipping features at light speed now, which means the volume and complexity of that data exhaust is just exploding.
Hmm.
But the data engineer is the one who has to pave the road fast enough so the whole system doesn't crash.
The structural imbalance is severe. Upstream developers are utilizing AI to write code faster, generate more tables, and alter schemas at an unprecedented rate. Meanwhile, downstream data teams are expected to ingest, clean, test, and govern this tidal wave of new data.
And if your data team is still relying on eyeballing row counts?
Oh, that AI-driven velocity from the upstream developers will shatter your infrastructure in a matter of weeks.
I brought up an analogy earlier, but here's where it gets really interesting. AI is like handing everyone a power drill instead of a screwdriver.
Right.
You don't work less, your boss just expects you to build an entire house by tomorrow.
That's spot on. And here is the brutal irony of the situation for the data engineer. One user in the sources noted that while AI is supercharging the software developers upstream, autonomous AI agents, specifically Claude, have actually started replacing the data engineer's downstream dashboard work.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The AI can ingest a clean data set and generate the charts, the insights, and the BI layer perfectly fine.
Which leaves the data engineer squeezed entirely in the middle. Like, their highly visible, deeply satisfying work, actually delivering the final insights to the business stakeholders, is being automated away by Claude.
Gone.
But at the exact same time, their invisible structural work managing the pipelines, the governance, the failing tests, is being multiplied by the AI-empowered upstream developers.
It creates a pressure cooker environment. And the big takeaway from this week's news is exactly what you said. AI doesn't reduce work. It raises expectations. The business sees that software features are shipping faster. And they see that Claude can instantly generate a chart, so they just expect the data pipelines in the middle to be equally instantaneous and flawless.
And the technological advancements driving this pressure are only accelerating. Like, looking ahead at the calendar, Microsoft Build is coming in May.
Always a big event.
We can fully expect more Fabric updates. The fact that they just tweak the vOrder defaults suggests they are actively analyzing global compute telemetry, and they'll likely introduce more aggressive, automated workload management features.
Databricks is also going to be pushing hard. Now that they've laid the educational groundwork with the new Data Engineer Associate certification, the rumors suggest they will announce even deeper Unity catalog features.
Probably tying AI directly into it.
Very likely. Automated data governance and lineage tracking powered by AI.
But the most disruptive element on the horizon is the persistent rumor surrounding OpenAI's GPT-5. Specifically, the promises of massive reasoning improvements.
Yes, the reasoning capabilities.
What does reasoning actually mean in the context of a data pipeline? Because we talk about generative AI writing SQL, but reasoning implies something more structural.
Reasoning in this context means autonomous architectural decisions. Right now, a human data engineer has to look at a Fabric lakehouse, analyze the query patterns, and manually decide whether to toggle vOrder on or off to balance compute costs against read performance.
Like we talked about earlier.
Exactly. A reasoning AI wouldn't just write the SQL. It would monitor the workload, understand the business constraints regarding budget and latency, and dynamically toggle those optimizations on the fly.
Wow.
It could look at the upstream schema changes generated by the software developers and autonomously write the DBT test suites required to catch the new entropy before it breaks the warehouse.
Which sort of forces us to synthesize everything we've looked at today, because to be truly well-informed in the data space right now, it requires hyper-vigilance.
Absolutely.
You can't just trust the defaults. You have to understand the underlying mechanics of your platforms, why optimizations like vOrder cost compute money, and when you should actually use them.
You have to know your tools.
Yeah, and you have to actively hunt for syntax improvements like BigQuery's chained functions just to reduce your own cognitive load.
And you have to implement rigorous testing and utilize governance frameworks like Unity Catalog, so you aren't just building brittle pipelines that wash away with the next upstream code push.
And most importantly, you really have to find ways to leverage these tools to protect your own sanity against the rising tide of AI-driven expectations.
It is a phenomenal amount to manage for anyone. And analyzing this dynamic where AI is accelerating the creation of data upstream and automating the visualization of data downstream, it brings up a fascinating implication for the future of the profession itself.
Oh, where does this ultimately lead?
Well, think about it. If the next generation of reasoning AI eventually automates both ends of the spectrum.
Okay.
If you can write the application code that generates the data and simultaneously configure the cloud storage, dynamically manage the compute optimizations like vOrder, AnandD, generate the DBT tests to maintain pipeline integrity, then the most valuable skill in the industry fundamentally shifts.
How so?
It won't be about knowing the exact syntax for a chained BigQuery function or knowing how to manually configure a Delta Lake. The ultimate skill will be understanding the business domain deeply enough to know if the AI is actually asking the right questions in the first place.
Wow.
The pure technical execution becomes a commodity, and deep business context becomes the absolute premium.
That is a wild paradigm shift. If the tools get smart enough to handle the technical entropy, the value of a data engineer moves entirely from writing the code to defining the strategy. Does the distinct role of the data engineer eventually just dissolve entirely back into traditional software engineering?
It's very possible.
Well, it is definitely something for you to seriously think about the next time you log in and realize the blueprints to your infrastructure have changed overnight yet again. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and we'll catch you next time.